Mr. Wilkins, I don't know. Getting back to if and when desegregation is put into effect. It's the contention of your organization that it's the patriotic, the Christian, and the American duty of people in all communities to begin getting ready now for desegregation in the public schools come next September. How would you, if you had the authority, begin desegregation, say, in Clarendon County, South Carolina?
Well, Mr. Debenham, I'm not a school board member familiar with school administration, but I think the Clarendon County School Board can make a workable plan which will satisfy the Supreme Court opinion. One method that has been suggested is that pupils attend the school nearest their homes in a normal school district. If this were followed in many communities, there would still be some all-Negro and all-white schools. There also would be some fringe area schools. Perhaps on the high school level, there would be more actual integration than on the elementary level. I mean, of course, in certain areas. However, the decision is up to the local school board.
Are you laboring, Mr. Wilkins, under the impression that any school board in Clarendon County, South Carolina, or any other county in the South where Negroes outnumber whites, is going to strain itself to arrive at desegregation? Don't you know that in most instances, Southern school boards are going to fight it in every way possible, within the law now if they can, by changing the law if necessary? As a matter of fact, the voters in Georgia and South Carolina and Mississippi have already taken this evasive action. Come to think about it, it isn't really evasive action. It's we are simply not going to have it action.
I'm afraid that's true. Undoubtedly, there will be some attempts at evasion and in some cases defiance. We are not commenting now on the actions of some state legislatures, because we believe that when the time arrives and they actually do something or fail to do it, the situation will be considered in the proper place, namely the courts. It is inconceivable to me, Mr. Debenham, that responsible public officials will maintain for any length of time any program of defiance of an interpretation of the Constitution. Their emotional outbursts are understandable. Their political reactions are even more understandable. But when the first storm blows over, we believe there will be more people anxious and proud to try to comply with the law than there are those who counsel defiance.
You say, Mr. Wilkins, when the first storm blows over, how severe do you expect that storm to be? Will it be another Hurricane Hazel, or just a summer thunder shower, in your opinion?
I think it'll be somewhere between the two. Let me emphasize once more that we understand clearly that this decision has overturned a deeply rooted tradition. We know that thousands of white people in the South are having difficulty adjusting themselves to this prospect, and that many of them are searching their souls on it. But we believe they will come up with the answer that all Americans arrive at, namely compliance with and not defiance of the law. If you mean by storm physical violence, I would say that we do not anticipate that. Every advance of the Negro out from the traditional pattern has brought, on the part of some, prophecies of violence. Actually, this violence has not materialized. I don't believe the white communities in the South will encourage, condone, or permit violence against children.
I wasn't thinking, Mr. Wilkins, of violence against children. I was thinking of the possibility of clashes between adults and the possible wrecking of the whole public school system. North Carolina, as you know, is generally recognized as a rather liberal southern state. But Attorney General Harry McMullen of North Carolina, basing his conclusions on an exhaustive questionnaire sent out to every school superintendent in the state. Wand in his brief before the Supreme Court against desegregation that attempts to force integration now will result in violence. Do you question that contention? Do you question, Mr. Wilkins, the sincerity and the truthfulness, for instance, of those 158 school superintendents in North Carolina who said forced integration will not be accepted peacefully by their people, as compared to only 7 who said it would be accepted peacefully? Isn't that rather conclusive and expert testimony that forced integration is going to lead to trouble?
In my opinion, Mr. Dedenham, there has been too much talk of violence by people in supposedly responsible positions. If we approach this question from the outset on the basis of violence and issue continuing statements about violence, we actually are planting the idea and encouraging violence. Those school superintendents did not mention the word violence, but they said the new idea would not be accepted peacefully. That can mean many things besides violence. We think public officials ought to cease talking of violence. Years ago, well, back in 1949, the attorneys general of a number of southern states asserted in a brief that there would be violence if Negro students were admitted to southern state universities. There has been none. Just because an attorney general includes this assertion in a brief doesn't make it so.
Well, Mr. Wilkins, what you're saying actually is that desegregation, in your opinion, is inevitable, and the South, all of it, might as well prepare to accept it.
Mr. Dedenham, what I'm saying is that a lot of people in the South, in certain situations, are making a mountain out of a molehill. And this applies to many, many areas where integration can go forward next September without any major difficulties whatsoever. In other places, there will be bigger problems, perhaps more complex, but they can be solved.
It's been contended, Mr. Wilkins, that Negro school children are so far behind white school children in their schooling that integration will result in a lower educational standard all through the South. And goodness knows, in a lot of places, that standard is already low enough. Will you comment on this?
Now, Mr. Dedenham, this contention is widespread, and I'm glad you brought it up. The people who advance it do not realize, I am afraid, that they are confessing that the separate Negro school system has not been as good as the white school system. In other words, we have never had truly the separate but equal system. If the Negro children are behind the whites, then the fault lies primarily in the segregated system and in the school administrations. However, there are many thousands of Negro children who are up to standard. There are others who may be below standard through no fault of their own, who can be brought up to standard in a short time. This has been proved by Negro boys and girls who have transferred from southern segregated systems to high-grade northern systems. Usually with extra work, they catch up very quickly. Those who do not are dropped back in grade and proceed from there in a normal manner. The same would happen in the South. I am sure that integration will not level down the white school system, but will tend to level up the Negro one.
Mr. Wilkins, has your organization ever considered the possible psychological damage that might be done, that would be done, say some psychologists, to the little Negro girl with the coal black skin and the kinky hair, and from a home economically insecure, who, thrown into intimate contact and competition with a little white-skinned, blonde, curly-haired girl from a white home that is economically secure, would not this little Negro girl get along much, much better and be much happier in an all-Negro school?
Mr. Debnam, that is a point on which I can offer no expert opinion, since I'm not a psychologist, and we don't have before us a specific situation, only a hypothetical one.
Yes, but don't you admit, Mr. Wilkins, that with complete integration, that hypothetical situation you mentioned will become a real situation in thousands of cases?
Yes, indeed I do. And I was about to say that I don't believe the average colored child or the average white child will have more than ordinary difficulty in adjusting to the new situation. Children usually work these things out much more easily than adults. After all, both are going to school to get an education. They will soon find which ones are smart, which are average, and which are dull. They will discover in free competition the good students, whether they be black or white, and the bad students, regardless of color. Intelligence, Mr. Debnam, knows no color line. If you'll give me another minute on this...
Go right ahead, Mr. Wilkins.
I believe the only way we're going to get rid of these suppositions, these myths and misunderstandings, is for our children to go to school together. I think you will agree, although you may not agree on the remedy, that one of the great difficulties in the so-called race question is that whites do not know Negroes, and in a sense, Negroes do not know whites.
I thoroughly agree with that, Mr. Wilkins. But I have my doubts that mixed schools will bring light to this darkness.
That is a matter on which we can fairly disagree. But let me say, in closing this particular part of our discussion, that so far as that little black girl you mentioned and that little white girl, the little black girl and her parents stand ready and eager to engage in the friendly competition of the classroom. We are confident she will hold her own very well, and not only to her own advantage, but to the advantage, too, of the little white girl, who, by her association with the little Negro girl, will realize that virtue and intelligence are things that aren't governed by color.
Mr. Wilkins, your organization is called the Association for the Advancement of Colored People. I'm well aware of its fight on behalf of certain so-called civil rights. But I wonder if your group is doing anything about the advancement of the Negro in other fields. Take, for instance, the field of health. I saw a few days ago a report that stated that in the past 8 years, reported cases of syphilis in Virginia have dropped from a rate of 103.7 in every 100,000 in the white population to a rate of 45.8. In the same period, the rate among Negroes has dropped from 1,364.6 to 550.1. Negroes, said the report, make up 21% of the population in Virginia and contribute 83% of the venereal disease. Is your association doing anything to attempt to remedy this situation?
Ours is not a health organization, Mr. Debnam, as you know. We have no department concerned with public health. We are exactly what we say we are, a civil rights organization. We never have pretended to be an overall association concerned with every phase of Negro life. There are organizations concerned with health. However, even among whites, matters of public health are left primarily to public health authorities and to organizations specializing in health.
Do you find those figures, Mr. Wilkins, showing the fact the incidence of venereal disease among the Negroes is more than 10 times that of among the whites? Do you find them indicative of anything at all?
I would say that it indicates, first of all, that the public health authorities have not done too good a job in the areas where such high incidence exists, providing, of course, the figures are reliable and authentic.
Well, now, Mr. Wilkins, I don't know how reliable they are or how authentic. but they are definitely official.
Mr. Debenham, the reason I raised the question was because in so many instances of Negro-white comparisons, the figures have not been fairly presented. I don't question these because I've just heard them and have no way of checking. Besides, it is not my field. We Negroes, however, remember how the intelligence figures for white and colored draftees were misused after the First World War up until the Second World War. And in all those years, Negroes suffered from false generalizations made from those figures. I would say the job here on venereal disease is not one for a civil rights organization like ours, but for public health authorities, physicians, and private health organizations concerned with venereal disease.
I mentioned the venereal disease situation, Mr. Wilkins, only to illustrate the contention by a lot of people that we can't legislate first-class citizenship. That first-class citizenship is a thing that must be earned by the Negro race and every other race and by its own excellence. The Negro in the South has made tremendous, he's made magnificent progress. But there are a lot of Southerners who still insist he hasn't yet arrived at that state of grace where he's ready to be dumped into the same social pot with everybody else and all of us simmered down together.
Now, Mr. Debenham, I think we're talking about two different things. One is personal hygiene, and the other is citizenship. Some people take one or two baths a day, and others only on Saturday night. We can't do much about it by law, but no one would say that the man who takes a bath once a week or once a month should be denied the citizenship rights which are enjoyed by the man who takes a shower every morning. I know that the question of venereal disease is in the back of the minds of a lot of white Southerners and in the front of the minds of a lot of others. This is one of the problems that will be and must be solved. The only aspect of it which I and other Negroes deny and resent is the contention, sometimes spoken, and at other times only implied, that the Negro is inherently inclined toward venereal infections and the behavior which is supposed to produce a high incidence of such disease. We think he will respond to health education on this topic as other people respond, and it has been proved that where firm and intelligent health education is set up, the Negro is responsive. Incidentally, I would say that the fact that there is such a heavy incidence of venereal disease among Negroes in Virginia as compared to whites is an indictment of the state of Virginia. I wonder how many venereal disease control clinics are operating among Negroes in the state, and how much of the effort of public health authorities is expended in the Negro population.
Now, Mr. Wilkins, I don't know how many venereal disease clinics there are in Virginia, but I have an idea that there's no color line in the matter of venereal disease treatment in that state. But to get on to another subject, what are the plans of NAACP with regard to public facilities other than schools?
Like what, for instance?
Well, like municipal swimming pools and golf courses and parks and other recreational facilities.
Well, here, Mr. Debenham, we hew to the line. And I would not be honest if I did not say that we represent what many white Southerners regard as the extreme position. Frankly, we believe there should be no segregation of the races in facilities provided out of the public tax funds. We have no plans for attacking swimming pools as such. Our legal department has been turning down suits involving golf courses. Golf course suits are now being brought by private individuals at their own expense. Of course, we believe, there should be no color line in parks. We have no campaign in the sense of an aggressive, positive, detailed plan for pushing such suits. But we remain convinced that the color line must go. And I would say, within our general procedure in the next few years, We will act from time to time on these fronts.
How about hotels and restaurants, Mr. Wilkins, and other privately owned operations that are now operated on a segregated basis in the South?
We have no plans for attacking hotels, Mr. Debman. Restaurants, motor courts, and other private businesses, although we believe that a traveler should be able to get a hotel room, eat a meal, or stay at a motor court if he has the money and knows how to conduct himself as well as other patrons. However, these are not matters of immediate concern to us. We are primarily concerned with the expenditure of public money and with segregation and discrimination under such circumstances.
Speaking of spending public money, Mr. Wilkins, there are a lot of federally financed housing projects in the South that are segregated. In the North, too. What is your association's position on this matter?
Now, I'm glad you asked that question, Mr. Debnam, because we regard housing as a very important part of the picture. To give you a straight answer, we do not believe that housing constructed with federal or other public money should be segregated racially. We may be some time proving our point, but we believe it just the same. I might add that in an increasing number of northern and western areas, public housing is not segregated. Also, there have been no riots.
Seems to me, Mr. Wilkins, that I recall some riots in Chicago and Detroit.
You have me there, and thank you for reminding me. In Chicago, there has been stubborn resistance at one housing project built long ago during the Roosevelt administration. When the city housing authority adopted a non-segregated policy, it worked and is working it in other projects in Chicago, but this particular one had been all white for so long, the residents resisted the new policy. In Detroit some years ago, at the very beginning of the non-segregation policy, there was resistance at one of the housing projects, but that has now ended.
Hasn't there been trouble in some other northern and western cities, Mr. Wilkins?
I think not, sir. In Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Los Angeles, New York, there is no segregation whatsoever in public housing projects. New York is perhaps the outstanding example. With more than 25,000 Negro families scattered in projects all over the city and living in peace and dignity with their white neighbors.
It might surprise you, Mr. Wilkins, but we've got hundreds of thousands of Negro families scattered all over the South who are living in peace and dignity with their white neighbors. The advance in racial understanding and mutual respect in the South in the past generation has been without parallel in all of human history. That advance, all Southerners hope, will be continued. But a lot of sincere people of goodwill in the South feel NAACP is trying to move too fast. And this invasion, or this attempt to invade the white schools by law, will set race progress back, as former Governor Battle of Virginia said, 50 years.
I think, Mr. Debnam, that former Governor Battle is too greatly disturbed. I am convinced that now that the blight of racial segregation is to be removed from our public schools, white and Negro pupils will grow up knowing each other better and each respecting the other immeasurably more than it would have been possible under the old segregated system. Progress in racial understanding will not be set back by this decision. It will be speeded up tremendously as both races move along together at long last toward a complete and actual realization of the American dream that every man is equal before the law and in the sight of God and in the hearts of his fellow man. I would like to say here in closing, Mr. Debnam, and I must close, because of the press of other affairs is closing in on me, I would like to say that I am deeply appreciative of your vision and your initiative in making this discussion possible and recording these interviews for broadcast over the Smith-Douglas network. This is the first time, to my knowledge, when a white man and a Negro of differing opinions have sat down before a microphone and discussed calmly, but at the same time pulling no punches, a sincere difference of their opinions on this matter that vitally concerns all of us, both white and Negro. One of our great roadblocks to real racial understanding in the past has been that each race, in most instances, has discussed this matter within itself. There has been no meeting of minds, no real exchange of opinions, no give and take in frank discussion out of which might grow understanding. I appreciate the opportunity of making this broadcast.
Mr. Wilkins, let me say to you that I, too, greatly appreciate your taking time out of your busy schedule. And I can see from that great stack of mail that is piled up on your desk that it is a very busy schedule. Taking time to engage in this free and frank discussion. These interviews, I feel sure, will add nothing of heat to this problem that is already hot enough. But it's my sincere hope and belief that they have added something of light. Again, let me say a sincere thank you.